It is Monday, March the 6th. This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us. Coming up, more missile launches by North Korea and analysis as to why.
To showcase to the world's bargain hunters of missiles, technology and missiles, North Korea's capabilities.
Also ahead, wiretapping allegations by President Trump against former President Barack Obama. What's going on now these days with the OJs and what's buzzing on social media? Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. North Korea fired four ballistic missiles east of the peninsula today, with Japan saying three of them landed in its waters.
北朝鮮が本日4発の弾道ミサイルを発射し
Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe said the missiles landed in Japan's exclusive economic zone. He also said Japan will collect and analyze information regarding this issue and lodge a strong protest. He added that the ballistic missiles fired this time show clearly that North Korea has become a new kind of threat. This comes as joint military exercises between the U.S. and South Korea have gotten underway in the area. For some perspective on all of this, VOA's Victor Beatty asked Tufts University scholar Sung-Yoon Lee if the missile launches are in response to the military exercises.
North Korea is expressing its umbrage at U.S.-South Korea combined military exercises that have been going on since the late 70s. Of course, North Korea wants to make a point of that and complain and try to get its two adversaries to cancel those annual exercises. But the truth is, North Korea seeks many, multiple objectives with this latest missiles barrage. First, test the untested Trump administration by trying to paint it into a corner with another small escalation. Get the Trump administration to sort of accept North Korea's de facto provocative ways, accept it as a de facto nuclear power by escalating and then toning it down a bit and waiting to be compensated politically and economically. And this rather primitive strategy has done wonders for North Korea over the past 25 years. Second, South Korea is in political chaos. Remind the South Korean public that you elect a hardliner like President Park Geun-hye, who is impeached, and maybe the nation's superior court, the constitutional court, will decide in the coming days whether President Park is permanently to be ousted or be reinstated. During this volatile time, remind the South Korean public, you dare to confront us, and you have more to pay for it than we do. There's more security threat to you than to us. So beware and appease us. Give us gifts. Perhaps another objective is to showcase to the world's bargain hunters of missiles, technology and missiles, North Korea's capabilities. I believe that North Korea's blatant, reprehensible murder in a very public place in Malaysia at an international airport some 2 weeks ago of the leader's half-brother. In some ways, it must have been a demonstration to the world of North Korea's advanced chemical weapons capabilities. I cannot imagine that North Korea did not calculate that. In the event they are caught, at the very least, they show the world how good they are in the use of VX nerve gas toxic agent. So, you know, my point is North Korea has very little to lose in conducting this missile test.
What kind of reaction do you expect from the international community on these latest launches?
Well, we only have the past precedents to go by. This is, I guess, in a conventional way of looking at international relations, not a major provocation, not like planting a bomb somewhere in a big building, killing hundreds of people. So, as North Korea has done it over the past 25 years, probably they will walk scot-free, walk away with, you know, with this another round of blatant violation of many UN Security Council resolutions. because this does not call for military action. This does not call for any kind of a new attempt by the United States to squeeze Pyongyang's finances. So probably there will be some rhetorical condemnations. The combined military exercises between the U.S. and South Korea will go on as planned, and North Korea will have reinforced to the U.S. and South Korea, don't mess with us.
Malaysia on Sunday said its expulsion of North Korea's ambassador was intended to send a message to Pyongyang that it cannot manipulate the investigation into the killing of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's half-brother.
That's right. At the same time, you know, it sounds like a hard line or a very strong response to North Korea's absurd and offensive rhetoric, but it is not. You know, painting someone in your country, a diplomat, as a PNG, a persona non grata, it does send a strong message, but it does not lead to any kind of real punitive sanctions on the target nation. You are simply kicking out the North Korean ambassador. Unless Malaysia severs diplomatic relations with North Korea, there will be a successor, somebody else, who will take his place. And I remember when North Korean agents planted a bomb in 1983 in Burma, in Rangoon, which led to the killing of 17 high-ranking South Korean officials and 4 Burmese. Of course, the Burmese authorities were very indignant. They severed diplomatic relations with North Korea, but that did not exactly lead to any kind of repercussions for North Korea at the time, and Burma, in due course, normalized diplomatic relations with North Korea again. So I don't think the North Koreans are exactly trembling in fear at the latest justified response from Malaysia.
Soon-Yun Lee is a scholar of Korea and East Asia studies and a specialist on North Korea at Tufts University. He was speaking with VOA's Victor Beatty. I should note here the U.S. State Department responded to the missile launches with a statement just moments ago in which they said the United States strongly condemns the DPRK's ballistic missile launches, which violate U.N. Security Council resolutions explicitly prohibiting North Korea's launches using ballistic missile technology. This is VOA.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA. A leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio. Hello, I am Shaka Sali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from The Voice of America. Each Wednesday night, I'll put you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they, you and I, talk about the most important social and political issues in Africa. Shaka Sali saying, I'll be waiting for your call Wednesday night on Straight Talk Africa from The Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. A U.S. official tells the Associated Press that the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, has asked the Justice Department here in Washington to dispute allegations made on Twitter by President Trump that former President Barack Obama ordered the tapping of Mr. Trump's telephones during the presidential campaign. The official, not authorized to discuss the situation, spoke to AP on condition of anonymity. The Justice Department spokesperson, Sarah Flores, has declined to comment on the matter, and an FBI spokesman also did not comment. The New York Times newspaper is reporting that FBI Director James Comey has argued that the claim by Mr. Trump is false and has to be corrected. The Justice Department has not issued any statement in an effort to refute President Trump's assertion. Meantime, James Clapper, who was Director of National Intelligence in the Obama administration, spoke on NBC's Meet the Press about Mr. Trump's allegations against President Obama.
I can't speak officially anymore, but I will say that for the part of the national security apparatus that I oversaw as DNI, there was no such wiretap activity mounted against the president-elect at the time or as a candidate or against his campaign.
For more on all of this and other developments involving the Trump administration, VOA's Jim Stevenson speaks with our Senate correspondent, Michael Bowman.
It was just a few days ago that Donald Trump arguably gave the best speech of his political career, and it could not have come at a better time. His address before a joint meeting of Congress, where he got to lay out his vision for the country, and for someone who has gotten a fair amount of bad press for things that he said in public, this speech was quite well received across a broad spectrum of journalistic outlets and from just general comments from the American people. And then he very promptly stepped on that message and any momentum he might have had. He came out with an early morning tweet storm, essentially accusing Barack Obama, his predecessor in the White House, of wiretapping his phones in Trump Tower in New York City during the campaign. And needless to say, that was a bombshell allegation.
These are very serious charges, by the way, which he followed up with Arnold Schwarzenegger's firing from Celebrity Apprentice. So one kind of wonders the confluence of events there. But anyway, the media has not been able to find any facts to substantiate this claim.
Well, that is true. And that is because, number one, Donald Trump and the White House have provided no evidence to back up this claim. But number two, if there were wiretaps, these are things that are authorized by a court. And in many cases, it is a secretive court. It is a court that meets in secret, that considers evidence in secret, and where either the FBI or members of the intelligence community can go to these secret courts and present evidence. Those proceedings are not for public consumption.
Right. So presumably because they're investigating a crime of some sort.
Right.
And so you can't publicize this.
Exactly. So in the absence of anyone speaking about it, the news media basically has nothing to go on except what it can see. There are essentially two possibilities. Number one is that Donald Trump made this claim without any basis in fact, and that it will be proved false at some point. Or number two, maybe there was some kind of surveillance of Donald Trump. And in a sense, Donald Trump has opened up a can of worms of speculation about himself that he cannot control by his very tweets. I mean, if in fact there was some kind of surveillance performed of him during the campaign, then that means that a court would have had to have concluded that there was evidence to warrant that activity. Wiretapping and invading someone's privacy is not something that's taken lightly. So the evidence that would have had to have been presented against Donald Trump or against his inner circle or against his team would have had to be fairly convincing.
And this isn't just a wiretap allegation against anyone. This is against his predecessor, a former U.S. president.
Right. What Donald Trump is alleging is that either the Obama White House went through the hoops of getting the authorization for the wiretap or simply circumvented the law and ordered it a la Richard Nixon on their own. And of course, if that happened, that would be the most egregious case of lawlessness that anyone can remember in recent memory coming out of the White House.
VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman. Michael, thank you.
Always a pleasure.
Next on Let's Talk, domestic violence. The problem that faces societies worldwide. Join host Sanday Shumari and his guests discussing domestic violence. Let's Talk comes to you Monday at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
The world is in the midst of a mobile tech revolution that promises to change the way people live our lives. That according to some industry experts. Latest innovations have been on show at the Mobile World Congress going on in Barcelona. Henry Ridgewell following the story.
Mobile technology has changed our lives, but there's a lot more to come yet, say industry insiders at the Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, Spain. It's a showcase of the latest technology and a glimpse of what the future holds. Meet Pibo, a mobile-connected robot designed to help families connect and express their emotions in the digital age. Or you could invest in a digital hang drum, a traditional instrument used in yoga, updated for the 21st century so it syncs with your smartphone. US giants AT&T and General Electric have come up with smart street lamps with cameras, sensors and microphones connected to 4G mobile networks. Over 3,000 are being installed in San Diego, California, and will be used for traffic analysis. But the makers have bigger ambitions, says AT&T product manager Trey Winter.
You're going to be able to detect smart parking solutions, gunshot detection inside of a city infrastructure, environmental features, detecting weather, smog, pollution, really bringing to life the intelligence inside of a city.
Much of the buzz at this year's show is around super-fast 5G networks with faster download speeds and almost zero delay. Roger Chen of CNET magazine explains.
So we're talking about real-time connection. The best example someone's given to me is a surgeon performing surgery in one country with robotic hands in another country.
Mobile technology is transforming economies in many African countries. There are smartphone apps for herding cattle in Kenya and for connecting dirty laundry to mobile washerwomen in Uganda. Eneza uses basic mobile technology to offer access to a huge range of education. 2 million students are signed up to its virtual classroom, and the better their grades, the more mobile airtime the parents receive. Stephen Haggard is the company's chairman.
They're able to access all the education they want for a subscription that's about 10 cents, 10 US cents per week. That covers the full curriculum and will get them from everything they need to do around age 8 through to finishing school. The reality in most of Africa is that mobile technology is actually the only way that you can reach huge numbers of people at low cost with any kind of content.
A recent report by consultants McKinsey predicted that by 2025, half of sub-Saharan Africa's billion-strong population will have internet access, over two-thirds via smartphones. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
And now it's time to find out what's trending on social media. G. Abby Lee here with the latest. Hey, G.
Hi, Steve. The top story is the White House calling on a congressional investigation into President Trump's assertion about wiretapping. As you know, Press Secretary Sean Spicer called for an investigation into the POTUS's claim that the Obama administration abused investigative power during the last election. Spicer declined to provide further comments.
You know, gee, I would assume that Spicer tweeted about all of this. Tell us what he said.
He sent four tweets on this topic Sunday in which he said, President Trump is requesting the Congressional Intelligence Committee to exercise their oversight authority to determine whether executive branch investigative powers were abused last year. A New York Times reporter tweeted there are no credible public sources for such claims, only President Trump's assertions.
Well, I guess, G, we'll have to wait and see what comes out of the investigation. Gotta be other stuff out there trending. What you got?
American actor Sarah Jessica Parker scored an invitation to meet with the Russian ambassador to the U.S. That's because she shared a meme poking fun at Attorney General Jeff Sessions meeting with him. She played the main character Carrie Bradshaw of the uber-popular cable TV series Sex and the City. I also shared that meme on my Twitter account at GAbbyLee. That's Abby like the cathedral, not Abigail. But it won't be very fun unless you have actually watched the program. Last but not least, I also want to talk about celebrity chef Gordon Ramsay's recent comments on Twitter. He has been replying to his Twitter followers who asked for reviews on their meals. And it looks like you have to have some thick skin to be able to deal with him. When asked to rate a follower's dinner out of 10, he replied, painful. When asked to come over for a plate, he replied, pass. But this is my favorite. When asked for a review on a chicken Alfredo dish, he replied, chicken, I'm Alfredo to eat that. Steve, back to you.
Sounds like Gordon Ramsay. What a guy he is. Many thanks, G. International Edition's G. Abby Lee. As G just mentioned, you can follow her on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. I'm there as well at VOA Norman. And our program, International Edition, can be found on Twitter at VOA _IE. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute. The folks at NASA's MAVEN program recently had to give their spacecraft a small unscheduled course correction so that it wouldn't smash into Mars moon Phobos. The spacecraft that has been circling the red planet for a little over 2 years conducted a motor burn that gave it a slight bump, about 0.4 meter per second in speed. That minor maneuver, however, kept the spacecraft from smashing into the Martian moon only a week later. MAVEN instead will miss crossing into the path of Phobos by 2.5 minutes. NASA reports that this has been the only collision avoidance operation the spacecraft had to conduct since arriving at Mars in September of 2014. According to the space agency, MAVEN, short for Mars Atmosphere and Volatile Evolution, has been studying the red planet's upper atmosphere, ionosphere, and how they interact with both the sun and its solar wind. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. So good to have you with us this day. You know, it's time now for a little something from our music department. Six decades later, and the OJs are still touring, concerts sold out everywhere they go. Walter Williams and Eddie Levert first met when they were 6 and 7 years old. As teenagers, they formed a band originally consisting of Levert, Williams, Bobby Massey, William Powell, and Bill Iles. In 1963, the band took the name the OJs. It was in tribute to Cleveland disc jockey Eddie OJ. Several members have changed, but the core, original lead singers Eddie Levert and Walter Williams, continue to front the group, along with Eric Nolan Grant, who joined the OJs in 1995. Lonely Drifter was the OJs' first chart appearance back in 1963. The OJs found their biggest success when they teamed up with producer-songwriters Kenneth Gamble and Leon Huff. And by 1972, Iles and Massey had left the group, and then the trio went on to make tons of hits, such as their Billboard Hot 100 song, Love Train.
OJs, everybody!
Numerous hits followed throughout the 1970s and into the 80s and the 1990s, and the OJs were inducted into the Vocal Group Hall of Fame in 2004 and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2005 because of such great hits as Used to Be My Girl.
Shoot, 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 sh stop any good loving. Yeah. Ask me how I know, and I'll tell you. She used to be my girl. I respect her. When she was mine, I used to neglect her. Oh, she wanted more than.
Yeah, this is from a recent concert. Those guys, at their age, spinning all over the stage, you would have thought they were 20 years old. It's amazing, amazing. Hey, listen, everyone, thanks for joining us here on The Voice of America for International Edition. Hope you'll stay tuned for the latest world news coming up next. And for our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Chaz Hall, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. Have a great Monday, everyone. Now a bit more of those spinning and singing OJs.
So smart, you can't beat her cooking. Oh, ask me how I know, and I'll tell you so. She used to be my girl. Deep down inside, I'll place no one above her. She's warm and sensitive.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Iraqi forces backed by coalition airstrikes are making progress in the effort to liberate western Mosul from ISIS, said Defense Department spokesman Navy Captain Jeff Davis. The Iraqis have captured villages to the west of Mosul, and they have penetrated the formal city limits from the south, said Davis, adding, "We've seen some encouraging initial successes." Indeed, according to the commander of Iraq's federal police, Ra'ed Shaker Jordat, ISIS militants are increasingly being cut off from each other and are fleeing their remaining strongholds. The terrorist organization ISIS, he said, are living in a state of shock and confusion and defeat, and its fighters are fighting in isolated groups. Our field intelligence units indicate that the terrorist organization is falling apart, and its leadership are running away from Mosul. According to the Defense Department, Iraqi forces have liberated the Mosul airport, and the Ghazalani military base southwest of Mosul has been secured. The fight ahead will nevertheless be challenging, said Navy Captain Davis. Resistance around western Mosul is moderate, Davis said, with the terrorists using improvised explosive devices and indirect fire to harass and slow down Iraqi forces. The terrorists have pulled back into West Mosul, he said, noting the coalition expects a very challenging fight since ISIS is entrenched in the area. That's dense urban terrain, more dense than what we saw in East Mosul, in a place where they are well dug in, the captain said. Meanwhile, Iraqi forces continue defensive holding operations in eastern Mosul, he said, and the coalition continues to hit ISIS targets around Mosul. Targets included ISIS tactical units, mortar systems, rocket launchers, anti-air artillery systems, fighting positions, vehicles, and weapons caches. Every day, the United States is taking the fight to ISIS with the clear objective of systematically defeating and destroying the terrorist organization.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.